I love to coach basketball. I've wanted to be a basketball coach since I was probably 13 years old. I remember the 1987 Final Four with Indiana, Syracuse, Providence, and UNLV, and I taped the two semifinal games, then tried to break down the film like a coach would. Despite my explosive athleticism that I developed in high school, I knew that would not be enough to carry me through. So to stay in the game, I knew I had to be on the sideline. I was fortunate enough to work for the legendary Ray Nacky in college, which led me to Mike Power, Jamie Sale, Tom Betts, and others. I've been able to foster tremendous relationships with my assistant coaches over the years, like Jerry Gradiville, Corey Vasek, Sarah Goodwin, Jeff Ritz, Adam Ronfelt, Mark Palacek, Ginger Durow, and Chris Eastman. Fortunately for me, I've gotten to have three separate occasions where I've gotten to have my son Michael be my assistant coach, and I really wanted to coach with my son Carter. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen. As many of you know, I decided to turn in my resignation as head coach at my current job at Fort Calhoun. Let me be clear, this was my decision. My administration, who has been the absolute best administration that I have ever worked for in any situation that I've been in, made it clear that I could come back if I wanted to. But I'm tapped out. Right now, I have nothing more to give. I made myself a few promises when I decided to get back into coaching, and two of them were that I was not going to allow the stress of the job to get to me again, and the other was that I was not going to bring it home to my family situation. Around the middle of January, both of those things began to happen. Probably once or twice a week, I would either not sleep or get very little sleep. Conversations about the program began to dominate our household, and when you're having those type of conversations around the house, they're usually not positive ones. I approached my AD in mid to late January, and I told him that I was 50-50 on coming back at that time. But I also told him that I have also done this job long enough to know that sometimes you get the mid-season blues and you almost always work your way out of it. The problem was, I never came out of it. It had nothing to do with the grind of the season. I love being around my players, putting together the best practice I possibly can, putting together the best game plan that I possibly can, and spending time with my assistant coaches. There were a lot of factors that went into it, and as things developed over the last couple of weeks, I knew that I was not going to find the energy that I needed to have to come back to the job in the capacity that would have been necessary for it to succeed. We all do this because of our passion for our players, to see them develop as people and players, our fascination with the X's and O's, and the love of competition. None of us are perfect at this job, and we all make mistakes every day. Every program has its problems, and every coach has people that don't like them, even those that are having the most successful seasons. Hell, one of the things that I've learned in my coaching career is that the seasons that you are the most miserable are often the ones that you're highly successful when it comes to wins and losses. That pressure comes from within, but it also comes externally in a variety of forms. And all you can do is keep pushing through it, staying on the grind. If you do this job long enough, you'll eventually feel that lack of appreciation for your efforts. In many ways, we've gotten to the point where nothing is ever enough. If you get over 500, then you're asked, why didn't you win 3/4 of your games? If you win a tournament game or two, you're asked, why didn't you get to the state tournament? If you get to the state tournament but don't win it after a trip or two, the questions arise about your ability to win a state championship instead of appreciating how difficult it is to get to the state tournament. You spend countless hours planning and executing practices, scouting reports, workouts, and team bonding activities for your team. But then you're told that if you're really committed to the job, you'll also coach AAU or open the gym up for extra workouts. You're attacked personally, and no circumstance is off limits. All the while, you can't respond because you know that any response will be twisted, misconstrued, and misrepresented for what you're really trying to say. Sometimes the question just needs to be asked. Why do we do this? Here's why we do it. We do it for the kids. It's that plain and simple. We do it because we know that they need it, that we're trying to help them grow as people, not just as athletes. We're willing to give tough love. We're willing to tell them no because they need to hear the word no from time to time. We know that athletics is a major tool to help young people grow, and there's no need to go down the list of reasons why athletics are necessary for the development of young people. For those of you that remain in the arena, do all you can to stay in it. Those kids need you. Sometimes it's so that they can stay out of trouble, sometimes it's so that they can learn life lessons, and sometimes it's just the one thing that truly gives them joy in their life. Those kids need you, and I've tried to do that for 28 years. Although I've failed at this numerous times, I also know that I've succeeded a lot more than I've failed. I'll also say this. If you're not happy, walk away from it. No one is making you do this. Your life should not be controlled by what a scoreboard says, and it should not define you. You only have one you, and that should be your priority. You are too valuable to so many people to allow yourself to be subject to something that doesn't give you joy. If you don't feel joy from coaching, don't feel obligated to do it. I've been there, and part of this decision comes down to just that. I don't want to lose my joy. Just because I don't have a team doesn't mean that I'm not coaching per se. I'm just moving on to a different stage of my coaching career. One thing that I'm really looking forward to is doing much more with a pen and a napkin. I've got a lot of projects and ideas that have been put on the back burner because of the time that I was putting into my coaching position. So instead of this being a secondary part of my basketball life, a pen and a napkin now becomes the priority basketball-wise. I don't have a team right now, so now a pen and a napkin becomes my team, and I plan on coaching it up the way I've tried to do it with a real basketball team for 28 years. We're going to have our fourth annual Coaches Clinic on April 27th, so get signed up. I know it's my clinic, but I feel it's a really great clinic. We plan on attempting to do our coaches retreat next fall. So as we narrow down the details on that, get signed up for that as well. I love basketball. Man, do I love it. When you get two teams out there playing the game the right way, it is the most beautiful sport in the world. The game has blessed me with so much, and I hope that I've loved it back as much as I love the game. I will miss so many things about being in the gym on a daily basis. But it's time to move on from the current situation that I'm in. Who knows? Maybe I'll be stopping by into your gym sometime soon, trying to learn something from you. Because, as I've always said, you should always be looking for ways to hone your craft one day at a time. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, episode number 76, and I am back with the, I don't know, Tony. You're just Tony. Back with Tony Viss, getting ready for the state tournament here. Tony's high school, Cedar Rapids Kennedy, their boys team is undefeated and number one in the state, the number one seed, correct, going into the state tournament, Tony?
Yeah, we are the one seed again this year, yep.
Yep, so by the time folks hear this on Friday morning, we're recording this on Sunday night like we normally do, but by the time folks hear this, Tony would hopefully be in the finals at this point because they play Wednesday morning, and if they win that, they play Thursday evening, and then finals are Saturday night, right?
Friday night, I think it's 7.
Oh, so you go 3 and 3 days?
Yeah, 3 and 3 days. It's been crazy because we thought we had a game scheduled on a Thursday, which was one of the last dates you could play to end the regular season. That team backed out on us, so we had like a 10-day break before we played our first tournament game, and then we won last Tuesday night, and we won't play again another game until Wednesday. And then if you're fortunate enough, you play Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So it's crazy. It's like slow, and then it's nuts for a while.
Yeah. Well, I hope you're on a dead sprint for 3 days, buddy. How about that? So
that makes two of us. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So everything's good though?
Yeah, I think everything's good. You know, we snuck out the sub-state final, knocked off a really talented, really good North Scott team that was rated top five most of the year, and then they kind of stubbed their toe at the end of the year and dropped down to a 2 seed, ended up in our region with us, and we had played them the year before to go to state as well, and it was a tough ball game. We jumped out 12-0, and then they responded back, got it to 12-11 at the end of the first quarter. We're up 14 late in the second quarter. They had a 3 to cut it to 11, and then we fouled them on one of our last shots of the quarter. They hit both free throws to get a 9-point game at the half. And then they hit like 6 out of 7 threes early on in the second half. And they actually took a 2-point lead on us with a minute and a half to go. Mm-hmm. And then we scored to tie it and then got a stop, got fouled on a shooting attempt, made both free throws. And then, like I said, they had a 3-point attempt that rimmed out at the end. And we were fortunate enough to advance on.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Awesome stuff. Episode 76. Tony, I've got one uniform number 76.
Is it football?
It is football, yes.
I want to say Lyle Alzado, but I think he was 77.
That I don't know, but it's not Lyle Alzado.
76. There's a really big 76, and it is escaping me right now. Offensive or defensive lineman?
I think he was on defense. Hold on. Let's see here. Where is he at? I think he was, yes, defensive tackle. Sorry.
Was it for the Cowboys?
Bears.
You said the Bears?
Bears.
Let's go with, was it Dan Hampton?
No, but I think he was a teammate of Dan Hampton.
Richard Dent?
Not Richard Dent.
Last guess here, Steve McMichael.
Mongo McMichael. I was going to say he was also a professional wrestler to see if that would help you out, but that was it. Steve McMichael, number 76. I want to give a special shout out to Mr. Jay Huff, former classmate of mine. He also wore number 76 in high school as well as a football player. So there you go, Huff. Right out to you there, buddy. So episode 76, we are going to talk about trying to build staff chemistry and to gain trust within the staff. And Tony, I'll just kind of let you, you know, kind of, because this was your find here. Tell us a little bit about where you found, or, you know, what you found and where you found it at.
Yeah. You know, obviously we live in the X world, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. And Coach the Coaches at Winning Coaches there was where I got this from. And, you know, I was just kind of sitting there, and as I read through it, was thinking of the staff that I'm on with, you know, John McCallum as our head coach, and then Jeff Rubis, Larry Williams, and then Ben Ethier, his three assistants. And then I popped in every once in a while, more so in the postseason, and sit bench with those guys and just kind of thinking what we're going through right now with, you know, breaking stuff down and dividing things up so it doesn't all fall on John's plate, to kind of, you know, make the burden a little bit lighter. And was like, this was a, you know, really good topic. And the other thing too is it's a really, really good staff to be a part of. Not only a part of the same staff, but I consider all four of those gentlemen my friends as well. Mm-hmm. And just really enjoy them and their friendship. And, you know, it's a good day to be around them each and every day. There's positive, and it's a good staff to be on.
Yeah, I definitely feel the same way about my staff. You know, obviously I'm a little bit biased towards my son. I better like him, you know. You know, Ginger Durow has been with me since day one. And Chris Eastman came along this year and did a terrific job with our JV and helping out with all the kids. And when you only have 16, 17 kids, it's pretty easy to coach that, you know, or to have all the coaches get to know all the players, mm-hmm. you know. So, you know, we probably did not do as much together as a staff as we normally do, but I think that it's a good thing. It's obviously you're going to spend a lot of time with each other, and I think one of the biggest things that you have to do, and it just seems simple, but you gotta like each other. And so how do you build that chemistry? How do you gain each other's trust? So on the Coach the Coaches thing that Tony sent, you know, take head coach level ownership, do your job well, complete assessments together, break down your communication, and be part of team building activities. So Tony, I'll let you start here. Which one are those you want to tackle first?
You know, I think the first one I want to do is do your job well.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where, you know, as a head coach, you know, you don't want to micromanage, and you have to be able to pass things off to your staff. And if your staff does really good job, it just makes it so that you are willing to, you know, even give them more responsibility, but it also helps you sleep better at night knowing that it doesn't all fall on your shoulders, that you have guys or gals, depending upon, you know, who makes up your staff, that are willing to pull the rope in the same direction, and that, you know, you can give it to them. And it's like if you yourself were doing it. And so I think those, that's probably the first step as a head coach to kind of lose some of that control freak tendencies. Is if when you pass that assignment off, if it's done at a really high level, it just makes things run so much smoother.
Yeah, I think, you know, this year, in my 4 years at Fort Calhoun, this year was the year that I gave the most responsibility to my coaching staff, without a doubt. My son was much older than he was, 3 years ago. He's got a lot more experience. He's still got a lot of growing to do. Coach Eastman's been around the game a lot, and Coach DeRoe has been with me for all 4 years. So you could do some things that we haven't been able to do in the past, and I really liked that. I could sit out of drill work for 10 or 15 minutes and, okay, hey, breakdown session. Coach Eastman's at this basket, Coach DeRoe's at this basket, Coach Plum's at this basket. We're going to rotate around 5 minute stations. And I completely step out of it and I let them cook, just different things like that. At the same time, to help them do their job well, Tony, I think one thing that we need to keep in mind, especially as head coaches, is we have to coach our coaches at times as well. And again, with my son, who's younger, he's hungry, wants to learn. But he's, talk yourself through the drill like this, explain it like this. You need to talk a little bit faster this time, or this time, hey, you need to talk a little bit slower and break it down a little bit more. And sometimes, we as head coaches now, like John's really fortunate with you that you're seasoned and experienced, so he doesn't need to coach you. But when you have younger coaches and you need to help coach them through it, you need to coach your coaches a little bit as well. So discuss their performance, make suggestions how they might do things. You don't want to, again, micromanage them. You don't want to take away their confidence. You got to let them find their voice. But you also have a responsibility to make sure that they do their job to the best of their ability.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing too, it allows you, as a head coach to, instead of being amongst the trees in the forest, it allows you to get a 10,000 foot view of what's going on. It also allows you a chance to kind of decompress a little bit and get ready for the next thing you're going to lead. Because if it's you for 2 straight hours and you've got to be on everything, and that's an everyday thing, you're not Superman, and you have to have people that can, carry the load, so to speak, every once in a while, and it allows you to be sharper and do a better job with the task that you're given.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this one, Tony, taking head coach level ownership. I think that one of the things that I really liked about my staff is they were at times like, they really cared. They really cared about the performance of the kids. They really cared about the kids in general. But, they wanted to make sure that things were done the right way. They wanted to make sure that we were doing all that we could to put the kids in the best position possible that we could so that they could have success. And you're never going to be perfect at that. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to, should have called, Denver instead of, Las Vegas or something like that, those type of things. But what I really liked about my staff this year was they had that head coach level ownership. When they made mistakes, they owned up to it. We were really conscientious about that, I felt like. And, our kids or our coaches, were really in line with that. And, I would kind of, how it is, you beat yourself up as a head coach sometimes. And they were also there to say, hey, no, coach, you had this, you did this right. It's okay. You did everything you could here with this situation, whatever the situation may have been. And I just really loved the commitment that we all had to one another in that regard, and the ownership that they felt like they had over the team and over the program as much as I felt like I had.
Yeah, when you can have the same level of care and the same level of concern amongst your staff, or at least similar, it makes it so much easier, because I think sometimes you run across some staffs and some assistant coaches, well, it's not my name that's in the head coach slot, that's going to fall on them. And that's where you kind of feel like you're isolated and you're out on an island by yourself, so to speak. And when you have those who care, at least in the same area code as what you do, it helps a lot. And when they care about the results of the games, when they care about the players, it just makes things go so much better. And that's really what it's truly all about. about is building those relationships and rooting for each other, you know, because that's what you want out of your, out of the players, is you want them to root for each other. And sometimes I know it's hard if you're the backup to a starter, or you're the starter and the backup's in for you, rooting for them to be successful, because that might eat into your minutes a little bit. At the same time, if he truly wants what's best for the team, everybody has to have that same area, that same level of concern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. And the only way you are ever going to get where you want this thing to go, to borrow it from, PJ Fleck. There we go. Took me a second, Tony. Seasoned and experienced moment there. You know, everybody's got to be rowing the boat in the same direction. You know, everybody's got to be moving this thing. And that doesn't just mean rowing the boat like passively. You got to take that oar and you got to put it deep in the water, and you've got to give that a big pull every single time that you do that. And I have been around staffs. I have worked on staffs before where you had, not when I was a head coach, but when I was an assistant coach, you felt like, you know, there was one or two times, I can think of one time especially, where we had a guy who thought very highly of himself, and boy, he took a lot of credit when we won as the assistant coach, and it was, you know, he was the man, so to speak. And but he, you know, I didn't feel like he worked very hard at it. I didn't think he, you know, he kind of rode the coattails of some talented players that we had within the program, and that wasn't good. You know, you can't take the credit when everything's going well, but then not take the blame when things don't go as well as you intended for it to do. And you got to put in the work. And I think that when you have head coach level ownership, if you're putting in the work and it doesn't work out, and then, you know, obviously we're all a little bit irrational at times, but after you get a chance to step back, whether it's an hour or a day or a couple of days after a tough loss or whatever it may be, if you can kind of say, hey, you know what, we did everything that we could, it just didn't work out this time, what can we do better, let's learn from it, let's get better from it, that's also kind of that head coach ownership that you want from your staff as well, don't you think, Tony?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where I think the head coach, you know, you want to be kind of in the background when things are going well, and when things aren't going so well, that's when you want to step up and take the blame per se. And I think it's one of those things too with, you know, your assistant coaches, it's a similar thing. You know, you want them also to have a part in it and to be accountable, just like what the head coach and the players are.
Mm-hmm. Next up, Tony, we've got, which one do you want to do next? You're up, your turn.
I would say be part of team building activities. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's one of those things with coaches, a lot of times, you know, we want the kids to be involved in those team building activities, and, you know, we kind of stay in the periphery and the fringe and kind of experience it vicariously through them. But sometimes it's good for everybody to be in on those team building activities, to let the kids know that you're in it together with them.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, you know just as well as I do that we're always looking for new and different ways to motivate our players and programs. But sometimes it's hard to find that perfect source that we're looking for. Over the past 25 years, I've collected hundreds of handouts to help motivate my players and programs. And now I'd like to share some of my favorites with you. The A Pen and a Napkin 101 Best Handouts booklet is now available to you for only $15. In this booklet, you'll find motivational material for all types of situations and individuals to help you communicate your values to your players and program. For ordering information, you can either DM me on Twitter or email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com for details. Yeah, I think that's a great thing. You know, last season we did some putt-putt golfing, and we did the putt-putt as well. This year we had a surprise day where we played. We took a basically 2/3 of a practice. And the kids were pretty tired. You know, it was right before Christmas break, and we played a game of wiffle ball. And I was out there pitching, and Coach Eastman was on one team, and my son was on the other team, and they were hitting and fielding and playing and doing all those type of things. We did a service project, and this is you know, this was pretty easy because Coach Eastman is in real life. He's Pastor Eastman. So he's very involved in service projects and reach out programs within the communities in the area. And so, you know, I let him, again, kind of delegating authority, and I'm sure we'll talk about that here at some point. I delegated it to him, but we were in there. We visited the nursing home in town, and we played games with some of the residents for a couple of hours, card games and board games and things like that. And mm-hmm. we were playing right along with them. I wasn't as much, but my assistant coaches were, and it was a fun thing, and to just be there and be present. Other times, like I remember a time where we did a service activity where we went and made meals at a homeless shelter here at Omaha. This was when I was at my old job, and I was trying to be right in there and help make some sandwiches and pack some lunches with everybody else. So I think those things are really important, Tony, to do that. And I think it's a time where, as a coach, you're not bashful. This is a time where you get to show them how human you are. And I think that's an important part of it too.
Yes. I think that is where they can see you in a different light besides the teacher light and the coach light. They can see you as a human being, and what, you know, do your actions match up with what you say, what your words are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, anything on that one? Anything else? We're good?
No, I just think, you know, like you were saying, you know, out there helping, you know, make meals and different things like that. We've done similar stuff where we've, you know, collected, you know, food and then dropped that off and different things there, and just, you know, being out there and helping carry it in, and just make sure that you're in the trenches with them and let them know that you're a part of it as well. And I think that's an important thing to again, build that trust amongst your staff and also amongst your staff with your team.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the breaking down your communication. I think that you know, communication is so obviously it's the most important thing we can do. Talking, and again, kind of this is a little bit of that coaching your coaches type of thing. But you know, making sure that they're using the same verbiage that you're using within the program, or you know when we get the ball to, you know, some people call it the nail, some people call it the mid lane. We call it Manhattan because, you know, it's the most valuable property on the floor, in our opinion. So we just said, hey, that's Manhattan. That's the most important place. We want to get to Manhattan, and we want to keep the other team from getting to Manhattan, you know. But, you know, I think that important part of your communication, breaking it down, making sure that everybody on the staff is saying the same thing, so that it's simplified for the kids, breaking down your communication with one another. Hey, Coach Smith, I really need you to do this like this, and to be clear and concise with it. You don't want an assistant coach that's going to spend, if you say, hey, introduce this drill, you got 12 minutes to introduce it and run it, and you don't want them to spend 7 minutes going so deep in the weeds with their communication of how the drill works that you only do the drill for 5 minutes, you know, and things like that. I think those are important aspects when it comes to breaking down your communication and making sure that everybody on your staff, as much as you can on those important aspects, are communicating the same level.
Yeah, I think verbiage, jargon, lingo, whatever you want to call it, just that your staff is consistent with it so that the kids aren't confused. And then the other thing, too, breaking down your communication, I also kind of look at it in terms of, you know, breaking down communication in terms of who's responsible for what.
Yeah.
You know, who's responsible for subs, who's responsible for how many timeouts, how many fouls, you know, just different things like that as well. And I think that's important amongst your staff, so that you each have, as you break down your communication, each staff member has something that they're responsible for to communicate with the head coach. And again, I think that builds trust. I think that builds ownership, and, you know, and it helps the staff to feel a part of things and together.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I did before, and this was at my old job when I had a really, really experienced staff. I between Jeff, Sarah, Mark, and then, you know, those three assistant coaches, probably combined had well over 60 years of coaching experience. 55 years with Ritz. No, I'm just kidding, Jeff, if you ever listen to this. But no, probably altogether, it was somewhere between 50 and 60 years of seasonal experience. And so, you know, they had great ideas, and they would, you know, pepper me with ideas. And sometimes you're just like, whoa, whoa, you know, you're like a cartoon character going back and forth trying to hear it. So we had a chat one day, and I said, hey, I love that everybody's thinking and we're throwing stuff out there and we're putting it out there, but it's not your fault. I don't know who to listen to and when. And sometimes I feel like multiple people are talking to me at the same time. So let's try this, you know, Jeff, Mark, Sarah, Kurt, whoever, if you got an idea, run it through Coach Ritz. And if Coach Ritz thinks that it's something that he needs to share or that we should be sharing, then have him share it with me so that we can, you know, so that we can streamline that communication. It's not that I don't want to hear your ideas, and probably most of those things Jeff is going to pass along because we have great ideas, but that will make it simpler in that way. And man, did that clear up a lot of really, it cleared up the sideline communication so much. And I felt like we were so much more streamlined along the sideline when we did that.
Yeah, and it just it helps, you know, so that you're not listening to three, four different voices, and, you know, just it gives the head coach kind of that idea of what they're hearing. You know, our staff, you know, it's a very experienced staff. You know, Jeff and Larry have been there for multiple decades and have a lot of experience, you know, as an assistant coach, and they both do a fantastic job, and they kind of have their roles clearly identified and do well. And Ben does an excellent job also. He's more of kind of like a director of basketball operations, but, you know, it helps things flow so smoothly with your roles defined and what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. So we've got one left here, Tony. Complete assessments together. What'd you have for that one, my friend?
You know, I looked at that one as like scouting reports and practice plans.
Yeah.
To me, those would be the assessments, and getting everybody's two cents, getting everybody's input on those things, I think is very helpful. You know, I mentioned guys on our staff. I know John watches close to probably 10 hours of film every week, and Jeff's in that same area code. And I know Ben and Larry also watch quite a bit of film, but it helps us to have an idea as we go into a scout, as we go into practice planning. I know you mentioned earlier, you know, having defensive stations or whatever you guys were doing. We did that last week. We were trying to break down actions that we're going to see on Wednesday morning. And so it just helped. We had four different defensive stations set up, 3-4 minutes is pop. We had the same offensive guys that were demonstrating the same action. We just rotated, you know, our core guys through and had them guard these actions in preparation for Wednesday. And hopefully they'll be familiar with them and do a good job.
Yeah. I think that, you know, a lot of times what you try to do, and again, especially when you're a teacher, it's not as easy, but you want to try and get your practice plan done and shared with your staff a few hours before practice. And again, some days you just run into it and you're just like, practice starts at 3:30 and I'm just finally finishing this thing off at 3:05 because I had to talk bell to bell for five periods today. I mean, that happens, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you can get that practice plan out to your coaching staff as early as possible, and I know some folks like to do their practice plans the night before. They don't go to bed until the practice plan is done for the next day. You know, and I think that's a great idea. Again, sometimes that's not possible. For me, it's always like, sometimes I just, you know, when I get home, and again, this is just me and the burnout factor, the stress factor. A lot of times when I get home, I just want to be home, you know, and you get the job done. You watch your film when you need to watch the film. You know, you crank it out. And trust me, there's plenty of nights where it's 10, 11 and you're still sitting in front of that laptop, you know, hour three, hour four, trying to get ready for West High or whatever it may be. But the more you can talk about that, the more you can share that information. Hey, this is what I've got on the scout here. And again, we did our scout differently than we've ever done it before. Again, just because we had the manpower to do it. But every, you know, I scouted every game, but then every assistant coach was responsible for seven teams. And okay, Ginger, you have, you know, East High. Let's talk about East High. This is what I'm seeing. What do you think of them? And a lot of times I try to say to my assistants, what do you think? As we begin this assessment, as we take a look at, you know, as we assess, you know, West High, what do you think? Because I want to hear their opinions first before I start interjecting mine. Because a lot of times, you know how it is, Tony, especially if your assistant coaches are not as seasoned and experienced, they'll sometimes go, oh, well, the head coach is thinking that. That must be what we should be thinking. So, okay, I'll go along with the head coach. Well, no, I want to hear your honest opinions and on those topics. So I think that's a big part of those assessments as well. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, because if you lead them into it, a lot of times with being, if it's a younger staff, they want to be pleasing to you. And so they're, oh, yeah, I saw that too. But yeah, I think it's a great place to start where you get their input, their stuff first, and then kind of take it and pair it up with what you think and see, oh, maybe they caught something different that you didn't see. And so it's just great when you have, you know, a bunch of different minds in there rather than just one.
Mm-hmm. Just some other things to bond and to develop your staff. You know, again, sometimes it's just time, going out for dinners and hanging out off the floor. You know, maybe after a ball game, hey, we're going to go up and have a beverage afterwards. And it doesn't have to be for 4 hours, but an hour, you know, yep. Winding down a little bit. I think with, especially your younger coaches, I think the off season is a great time to develop your coaches. I think it's a great time for, you know, you go to a team camp and, let your younger coaches, head up the freshman team that week or that for that camp or something like that. You know, just get them those reps. You know, we talk about players getting reps, but get your younger coaches reps during those team camp type of situations. And then just probably the biggest thing you can do, Tony, is just be a genuine person. Show your coaches that you care about them. Genuine conversations. Open yourself up. If you're frustrated with a player, it's okay to vent to your assistant coaches. It's okay to vent about a parent. It's okay to vent about an administrator. You know, you need to have those. You don't want to poison the well, but there's those frustrations are going to come along from time to time. And if they're having concerns, if they're having troubles in their personal life, if you know they're confused about their role or whatever it may be, you know, have those genuine conversations. Try to create those genuine connections. We do this for far too long at a far too high intensity level for far too little of money to not have a genuine connection with those people that you're working with and jumping into this crazy concept together.
Yeah, if you like each other, it goes a long way. I mean, it's just like with your team. If your team genuinely likes each other and plays, you know, for each other, not necessarily always just with each other, it goes so much further. It's the same with your staff. You know, you talked a little bit about allowing them to coach, you know, the freshman team. I remember watching the Iowa women. They did the thing on Big Ten Network, and what happened was, you know, Lisa turned the head coaching over for a couple games to Jan Jensen. And it's like, you know, they broke up the monotony a little bit and let Jan coach them a couple of those games. And then, like you said, it's not always about X and O's and about, you know, the team. Every once in a while, just check in with them. Hey, how's your family doing? How's the job going? Mm-hmm. You know, and just genuinely care about them, you know, as far as things go. And I think that goes a long way too. And sometimes if you are struggling with a kid, guess what? Your assistant coach might have a good relationship with them and can help to bridge that gap, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. A Pen and a Napkin University videos are just another way that a pen and a napkin can help you become a better coach. Our university video library is constantly expanding with topics ranging from interviewing for a job to full court defense to 25 universal truths about coaching. Our university videos will help you round out your skill set as a coach and help you hone your craft. Videos are $10 a piece, with bundling options available. To order, you can DM me on Twitter, send me an email at apenandanapkin@gmail.com, or order from our website, apenandanapkin.com. Be sure to check out the A Pen and a Napkin video library. Well, Tony, when you're talking about bridging gaps, who is the greatest hair metal band that can bridge any gap with anyone, anywhere, at any time?
Obviously, Europe with the Final Countdown.
Ah, yes, the Europeans from Sweden, who is still, they're trying to get into NATO. So, hey, there you go, Sweden. So, Tony, it is your turn for trivia. What have you got for me, my friend?
Right. Obviously, last week we were talking about the scoring record as Caitlin Clark was getting ready to break it, and she did today. But there were some interesting stats, and it's going to segue into the trivia question here in a second. But talked about, you know, obviously Caitlin is at the end of her fourth year. Pete did his in three. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Caitlin, as far as things went, with her, she has a three-point line. Pete yep. Maravich did not have a three-point line. But here's a stat. Here's the trivia question that I think gives a little bit more perspective as well. It's a two-parter because I know you like multiple parts to our trivia questions. Number one, how many field goal attempts per game by Pete Maravich? And number two, how many field goal attempts per game by Caitlin Clark?
So I think I feel really good about the Maravich one, and I'll be in the ballpark. I'm within three guesses. I'll be able to get it for Caitlin. So I'm just going to call it right there, buddy.
All right, I like that. Calling your shot there, Babe Ruth.
I'm pointing out to the bleachers right now. So, you know, he did that against the Cubs, by the way, 1932
yes,
World Series.
That's your team.
Yeah, I know. So I got Cubs gear on right now. Cubs hat, Cubs
attaboy.
Sweatshirt. Yeah. So, I believe Pistol Pete shot something around. I believe this is the graphic that I saw, Tony. 38 times a game?
38 times for Pete Maravich is correct.
Yes, and it counts. Absolutely. Pistol Pete, the gunner. He truly was a pistol. And then Caitlin, like I know her, like we're, Caitlin Clark, I believe... For her career, I think she attempts around 19 shots a game.
Bingo.
Yes!
Half as many attempts.
Yeah, half as many attempts. Half as many attempts. So, and of course, when we get into this and that and the other thing, we also have to bring in this fella.
How about that?
Mel Allen.
Yeah, little Mel Allen for you. So... we're recording this on Sunday night, the 3rd. It is the day that Caitlin Clark broke Pistol Pete's record, kind of anticlimactically. Technical foul.
Technical free throws.
She went for it with the 38-foot bomb to try and break it on that one, but she left it a little short. She shot it a lot today. I think I saw at the end of the game, she shot it 26 times, I think. So obviously well above her normal average. We've talked about Caitlin Clark a lot on this, and no matter how you slice and dice it, three-point line, shot clock, different eras, guys, girls, no matter what, just a remarkable, remarkable achievement.
Yeah, she's, you know, an all-time great. You know, I'm not going to get into the greatest college women's player of all time. I was listening to the Fox broadcast, and, you know, the two people doing the game had different ones than Caitlin Clark, but she's definitely...
One had Taurasi. What did the other one have?
What's that?
One had Taurasi, right?
Yeah, the other one went... Gus went with Cheryl Miller. Which I don't think can go wrong with any of those three arguing that they're the greatest.
And I think you could throw Breanna Stewart on there. That might be your Mount Rushmore right there. You know, sorry, I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Oh. There's a lot of great. I mean, Lynette Woodward was at the game today. Kelsey Plum was the record that she broke, the NCAA record. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great women's player, and she, you know, that old phrase, we're on the shoulders of giants. I mean, she's been very, very gracious multiple times, has mentioned how those who came before, and Maya Moore was at the game, and that was her inspiration. Yeah. They talked about how she had a conversation at what age with Maya after a game, I want to say against the Lynx in Minnesota, and how that really put her on her path for greatness.
I got one of those Championship Productions DVDs one time. It was UConn practice. And it was when Maya Moore was playing there. So I'm dating this a bit. But she did some stuff in those practices. You know, and they just basically turn on the camera and they just track practice, you know. Uh-huh. And I was like, holy mackerel. She's unreal. I mean, just unbelievable. And I think Maya Moore, because she chose to cut her career short to focus on social justice issues and people who have been wrongfully incarcerated and getting them out of prison and things like that, you know, I think people have forgotten in her individual case how good of a basketball player she was. So, along with Caitler, along with Maravich, Clark made the news this week for declaring for the WNBA draft. Has she found a realtor in Indianapolis yet, Tony?
She should, because that's 100% where she's going. I mean, the Fever have done a great job of putting out their, you know, season tickets and, you know, this, that, and the other. And then Leah Boston and her, I think that's going to be a great pairing. And you're going to see Indiana in the playoffs and being a major player in the WNBA sooner rather than later. Her being able to stay in the Midwest, I think it's a slam dunk.
Yeah, it's a really, really good fit for her and for the women's game, like you said, to be, you know, Indiana, the cradle of basketball, if you will, in the United States. I know it was invented in Massachusetts, but, you know, Bill Simmons has his new Basketball Hall of Fame in Indiana. I think her, like you said, her and Aaliyah Boston. Now, again, they're young players in a grown woman's league. It's going to take them a couple of years to develop, but it's a very similar fit to Wembanyama in San Antonio. I think it's going to be a good place for her to go. Now, Wembanyama, the team hasn't done well, but and maybe we'll talk a little bit about that in our NBA part of this. But I just think that she breaks the record, and then they've got the Nike commercial all fired up and ready to go. And I mean, you know, it's not only for her skill, it's for her charisma, it's for marketing, it's for everything that I think it's just going to be a slam dunk type of a situation for Indiana and the WNBA. Is she going to be on the Olympic team, Tony?
Really good shot of that one. You know, I know, and again, Sue Bird has continued to go, and it was, you know, if there was a female athlete that was kind of fighting against Father Time and being very successful, it was her. But they've needed a new point guard to kind of pass the torch off to. I think it could be her. And the thing that I'll be interested to see, you know, obviously she's known for the logo three, but you take a look at her passing might be the best part of her game. And I think that's the way she's going to earn favor with these veterans, because, you know, they were talking today with Ohio State, we're tired of hearing about her. But if you play with her, and the next thing you know, she's getting you points and she's averaging, you know, 10 plus assists a game, that'll be a real quick way to win her way in with the veterans.
And I think she's probably smart enough to realize that, you know, my role
is savant.
Yeah. You know, my role is different here. Brianna Stewart is here to score. Sabrina Ionescu is here to drop threes. Jackie Young is here to do her thing. I'm just a piece of the puzzle in this situation. With the University of Iowa, here's my role. With the Indiana Fever, this is going to be my role. But in the Olympic situation, this is my role, and I've got to play it and play it well to the best of my ability. So
yep. And then once she gets some of that experience, then her game can kind of blossom as she's there for a second round of the Olympics and a third round of the Olympics, if you will.
Yep.
Then now she's a captain. Now she's, you know, a bigger piece of the puzzle. And I think she'll realize that, and she'll see the moment and she'll seize it.
Mm-hmm. South Carolina women, back-to-back perfect regular seasons. Just an incredible run for Don Staley. You know, they lost a lot from last year's team, and here they are, undefeated once again. Just an incredible run. It tells you how good of a coach Don Staley is, and how it is truly a program that is here to stay as long as she's there. I really believe that. I mean, this is to be able to do this and not be at the blue blood of UConn or Tennessee. This says a lot about their program and what they're doing there.
100%. You know, I was talking about Sue Bird kind of handing the torch off to Caitlin Clark, and then you mentioned Geno and UConn, and I think that's what's going to kind of be done there too, where he's going to go from being the best coach in the college game, and if she isn't already, it'll be Don Staley. I mean, what an incredible job. You lose the WNBA Rookie of the Year, you lose other WNBA draft picks, and you run the table again. And I don't know of many people that would have predicted them to do that, because, by the way, they're in the SEC and the defending national champion, who added some pretty high-priced NIL pieces in there, was there as well. And I would have thought you would have picked them to lose at least a game, if not multiple games this year. And she goes in and refreshes, and they're really, really dominant.
Yeah. You know, looking at their roster right now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They have 7 players that average 8.5 or more points a game. Cardozo, I think is how you say it, Camila Cardozo, you know, 14 and 10, basically. But their leading scorer only averages 14 a game, but they average almost 87, or they average over 87 a game, and they play terrific defense. You know, and it helps having a 6'7" center that can protect the rim as well. I get that, but. But yeah, just really, really impressive what South Carolina and Don Staley has done there.
And you and I both know, I mean, when you go into a game, if you have a kid averaging 20, 25, whatever, and the other ones around her are scoring 3-4 points a game, she's going to look at some type of gimmick defense, or she's going to look at getting the best player on the other team, their best defender, and then the other 4 girls are going to be there to help all the time. And when you have 8 players between, like you said, 8.5 to 14 points a game, that's a really, really hard team to game plan for. I'll give you a football analogy. If you can run and pass it, that's a really hard offense. And this is one of those things where, in basketball wise, they can run and pass it.
Mm-hmm. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Tony, have you ever been in a situation where you're 9-7 in conference, and you're winning 3/4 of your games, and people would be really, really disappointed with that?
No.
Well, that's where Bill Self and the Kansas Jayhawks are at right now. 9-7 in the Big 12, and I'm trying to find the standings here. I got the wrong button here, but they are. They are not in the place where they are used to being in the Big 12. They are 6th right now in the Big 12, behind Houston, Iowa State, Baylor, Texas Tech, and BYU. Just, you know, again, 14-1 at home, but they're 3-6 out of the friendly confines of Fog Allen Fieldhouse. You know, they're still probably one of the best teams in the country, and they're playing in what a lot of people believe to be the best conference in the country. But I think that just says a lot about the the program and the expectations that Bill Self has created for himself at Kansas, that you're 9-7 and 21-8, and people are really, really disappointed and kind of frustrated right now.
Yeah, like you said, Marty, it just goes to kind of the standards that Coach Self has set there in, at Kansas. And I can't remember how many Big 12 titles in a row they had won, but he had spoiled them. You know, and I was listening to their game the other day against Baylor, and they were talking about, you know, Fran Fraschilla, who knows way more about the Big 12 than probably any other human being on the planet, was talking about the fact that this might be the worst bench that Kansas has ever had, and that Bill Self said, we'll never find ourselves in that situation again. I like it when I have eight starters. So again, you know, I have eight different guys that kind of rotate through. But, you know, the Big 12, the SEC might have a strong argument against it, but the Big 12 is a really, really good league. And you go on the road in the Big 12, I mean, it's, you know, whether it's in Ames, Iowa, or Waco, Texas, or wherever, it's tough to win on the road in the Big 12. There's some serious home court advantages there, but there's very little doubt in my mind that Coach Self, whether it's recruiting or the transfer portal or whatever the case may be, will have those eight starters next year, and Kansas may start it again on another run, but we'll see. The Big 12 is really, really tough. You've added in BYU, which, by the way, snapped Kansas's 19-game home winning streak.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a fleeting thing. I mean, winning is hard for 1 year, let alone winning, what they win, like 12, 13 regular season conference championships in a row. I mean, just think about that. For 18 years, or for 13 years, for 18 games, 18 to 20 games, you are the best team for over a decade. I mean, you know, that's just crazy, crazy stuff. You just, the law of averages tell you that should not be happening. But that is the standard that Bill Self has created for Kansas. It's a blessing and a curse. It's the type of thing that sometimes can swallow you up a little bit. Like, you're, you know, how can I live up to these expectations? But he definitely, obviously, he embraces them. He gets a pretty nice paycheck to embrace those expectations. He still owes us an Arby's meal. Bill, we'll talk about that at some point. But a lot of that is, like you said, what a great conference. You know, Iowa State is eighth in the country. They're 23-6, and Houston's number one in the country. Baylor's in the top 15. It's a tough, tough go. It's a tough go everywhere on the road in college basketball this year, Tony. I mean, gosh, the Big Ten is just beating, other than Purdue, they're beating the snot out of each other, you know? So I think it's just one of those seasons where it's just really evenly matched. And for the first time in a long time, Coach Self doesn't have the talent discrepancy that he normally has in the conference.
Yeah. And if you were to come to me and say, hey, you could have Houston or the field in the NCAA tournament, it would take me about a tenth of a second to say, I'm going to take the field.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't think it would take me even that long to do that. So, LeBron James, 40,000 points. That's a lot of points, Tony.
That's a lot of points. Way more than I scored by probably 39,998, but that is a lot of points. And, you know, I don't know if we'll ever see anyone have as great a career as what he had coming in as a rookie to where he's at, you know, two decades later and still playing at an incredible level. I think I was looking at stuff today that we're talking about, you know, each decade that he's been in the league, it's taken him almost the same exact number of games to score 10,000 points.
Wow.
That consistency is insane.
Wow. That is, I did not know that. I had not heard that. So, he has had, there's no debate that he has had the greatest career in basketball history. Now, Tony, you doubt yourself a bit. Just remember that you and LeBron have the exact same number of points at the college level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be able to sleep better at night knowing.
Yeah, exactly. So he has had, I don't think you can argue that he, I think there is no argument to say that he has not had the greatest career in basketball history. Now, if it's game seven, if it's one game and my life depends on it, am I picking LeBron over Jordan? I'm picking MJ. You know, that's me. That's me.
That would be me too.
Yeah. That's you too?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, career 100% no doubt. Peak, I think that's still an argument.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't disagree with you, but 40,000 points, just an awesome, awesome stat. You know, they lost the game. They lost to Denver, who's starting to turn it on a little bit here, Tony. They're starting to move their way up the standings here a little bit. I think they're only like a half game out. No, they are basically at a statistical tie with Minnesota and Oklahoma City for atop the Western Conference. They were down three or four games a couple of weeks ago, I saw, and now they've moved their way back up to where they are statistically tied with Minnesota and Oklahoma City. So here come the champs. They're starting to round into form, and until they're beaten, that's probably the team to beat, in my opinion, just because somebody's got to knock them off. I don't know what you think, buddy.
If you gave me the option that I mentioned earlier with Houston and you said Denver or Boston or the field, I'm taking Denver and Boston.
Yes. Yes, without a doubt. And obviously, health plays into that. Is everybody healthy? You know, if somebody gets hurt, can we reset the game and replay that game over again so the injury doesn't count, you know, type of a thing. Can Boston be stopped, Tony?
No, they beat Golden State today by over 50. I think that's their third.
I think they beat them by 40,000 points at
point win this season.
Yeah.
And I think they're a machine. I mean, they were talking to, I think it was Luka Doncic, after they had pinned Dallas's ears back pretty good. And he's like, it's insane. It's, you know, just, you can't not stop them. And if there's anybody that could, I would go with Denver. I think that's the only team that has a shot, but I'm beginning to think that I don't know if Denver has a shot either. Yeah. Boston at their peak is really, really good.
You know, and they didn't have Porzingis today, and they still rolled them. You know, halftime it was 82-36.
Holy cow.
Yeah, I mean, in an NBA game. And Steph and Draymond and those guys are playing. They hit 25 threes today. And so when you hit that statistical anomaly, it's again, it's almost impossible to win. And then not only, okay, so you've got all that shooting, but then you've got Derek White and Drew Holiday, who are just terrific. Two of the best perimeter defenders in the league. You got Horford, who's a great positional defender. You got Porzingis, who can protect the rim and use his length. When Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are like your fifth and sixth best defenders, that's pretty scary too. So it's not just the 3-point shooting; it's both ends of the floor that they are starting to get to the point where they are historically dominant in the way that they're playing.
Yeah, and they could, you know, and people are annoying them, and you know, I'm probably in that same boat right now, and you know, they're talking about like the last dance and different things like that with them. They're kind of doing a last dance type thing, and granted, I mean, we can't crown them yet. We're just early here in March, but they are having a very, very good season and look like a team that you could make an argument on. It could be one of the better teams in NBA history.
Yep, yep. Well, we'll see how it happens. Tony, you feeling good about the state tournament, buddy?
It's going to be interesting. You know, anytime you get to this time of the year, it's one of those things where you want to be playing well, you want to be healthy, and I think we fit those criteria. And, you know, each time you see a team win a tournament, you know, I'm not talking a 7-game series, I'm talking like an NCAA tournament or high school tournament, you have to survive one of those white knuckle moments. And yeah. I think the sub-state final was one of those white knuckle moments. And hopefully, you know, here in less than a week, we'll be holding a big trophy up on a Friday night. But it's a great group of guys. They work really hard. They play really well together. And it's a fun group to be around. So we'll enjoy, hopefully, these next 5 days and hopefully have some great memories from it.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, buddy. I hope you, obviously, you can't win the tournament unless you win the first game. So good luck to you on Wednesday morning. We're going to see how things are over here in my area and might try to get over on Thursday evening. You know, again, just got to see how it's going. So, but wish you nothing but the best. Go get them, get after it and cut down those nets. All right, bud.
I appreciate it, my friend.
All right. Episode 76 bonding with your staff, building them up. Hope folks enjoyed it. Hope everybody enjoyed that, the stuff that we went through here tonight. Of course, you know how to get a hold of Tony and I. If you have any questions or comments or suggestions or ideas, you know where we're at. So, coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.